So what did we discuss yesterday? Okay. What was the connection between chapter 11 and 12?
Yes. End of chapter 11. Krishna ended the chapter 11.
So why did he ask such question after Krishna had already established that devotion is what he's aiming at and what he wants us to do? To make it very clear, yes, so that no doubt remains. To make it very clear. To make it clear, especially to those who are not clear. Those who insist on finding some other conclusion to the Bhagavad Gita. Yes, good. Okay, and then what did Krishna say? So what did Krishna say? Which is better? Devotion to Krishna is better. And then Krishna gave us, you remember, so many reasons why devotional service is better. It described, it's easy. The senses are engaged.
It's natural.
It's
direct.
It's direct. Yes.
Difficult to theoretically understand that we are not this body.
It's difficult to theoretically understand that we are not this body.
Mercy.
There is mercy in devotional service. We get the reciprocation and help of Krishna. The jnanis have to study the Upanishads, which is complicated. For this, they have to learn Sanskrit. The devotees, if they can and want to learn Sanskrit, they can. But it's not that it's necessary. Whereas for jnana, one has to be able to grammatically analyze all the Upanishads. Yes? And what did he say about the impersonal process then? Very difficult. We heard two different words related to that process, you remember? Klesha and Dukkham. Signs of meaning that this process involves actually suffering. What kind of suffering? Not unable to express and engage the emotions, yes. And what else? You have to control the mind and senses all the time, like the milk on the fire. You can't leave it alone, otherwise it's gone. So you have to always be alert. And it makes the heart very hard. What else we saw about that process?
There is no reciprocation.
You're alone in your bubble.
And it's very difficult to meditate on nothing.
Yeah. Prabhupada was saying this concept, how to conceive of something which has no form, no qualities, which is beyond everything, which is pervading everywhere. It's risky. There is danger to fall. And what's this, the other danger? There are many dangers. One is to fall, one is atheism. To drift into atheism. Because it's so difficult to achieve the goal that you may just give up the whole thing and decide there is no absolute. Become an atheist. What is the other danger? Sorry? Oh, you may mistake the goal. Yeah, you may not attain the goal. Not exactly another planet, but you may not. The idea with Jnana Yoga is that it is a step
And after Gyan, you should be doing the Dhyan Yoga, and after that, you should come to Bhakti. But many of the Gyan Yogis, they just stop there. They realize the Brahman. And they never go beyond. They never come to know about the Paramatma. And after knowing of the Paramatma, they may never come to Bhakti. So there is a risk to never achieve the ultimate. Yes. Ooh, and then even Bahunam, Janmanam, Ante, after a long time, they become devotees, then still on their mind this impersonal thing is lingering. They cannot associate properly with others, and they cannot understand well the deity worship. They are not inclined to work for Krishna. No inclination. Because for them, work means it's all material. That is their impression from before. Work is all material. So that was a little discouraging. So Krishna said 2-3 words and Prabhupada expanded a long purport to make sure that we understand that it's not the right thing to do. There is a nice verse in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.4. Interesting. Which says that those who engage in the path of jnana or speculative knowledge, it is like beating an empty husk of grain. Right? Usually in the farm, you know, in the farms what they do? They harvest the grain, like the rice or the gehun, this wheat. The wheat, they have the wheat. And then what they do? They beat. They beat the wheat. And around the grain, there is a husk, there is a cover. So when you beat the husk, the grain comes out. I used to do that when I was a child. We used to go to the fields, collect the grains, and as children, we used to do this, we would beat it or crush it in their hands, and then the grains of gehu would come out. Then we would eat them and chew them. And after sometimes it becomes like chewing gum, natural chewing gum. But suppose the grain has already come out of the husk. It's hard work, actually. You see the farmers, they beat. This is for Prabhuji, the Varnashram project, living very naturally in the country. Nowadays, what they do, they put the grains on the road and they wait for the trucks to run over. So it's a hard work. Very wonderful work. It's a hard work. And after doing all this work, if no grain comes out, then you feel very unsatisfied. So this is the case with these mental speculators. The Bhagavatam says, "My dear Lord, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble." So this is what Krishna says. You get trouble. Klesho dikatrastesham. They get trouble. Loving service to the Supreme Person is the natural and eternal function of every living entity. If a person renounces his own constitutional function and instead laboriously seeks so-called enlightenment through impersonal speculative knowledge, his result is simply the trouble and bother that come from following an artificial process. A fool
So now Prabhupada calls them fools, naturally. A fool may beat an empty husk, not knowing that the grain has already been removed. Similarly, foolish is the person who throws his mind again and again into the pursuit of knowledge without surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Knowledge. For it is the Supreme Lord who is the very substance and goal of knowledge, just as grain is the substance and goal of the entire agricultural effort. So if we are in search of knowledge, we should know that Krishna is the object of knowledge. This is Him that we should search for. And those who are into this impersonalistic process and wondering what the truth is about and thinking that it is impersonal, they lose the very substance of knowledge, which is the Supreme Lord. Just as grain is a very substance of agricultural work. If there is work in agriculture, it is for the grain. If the grain doesn't come, then all the work is useless. Vedic knowledge, or indeed material science, without the personality of Godhead, is exactly like an empty and useless husk of wheat. So this is an analogy which has been given in the Bhagavatam. Now, hear something else. Because we have been hearing that devotional service is very easy. Prabhupada explained, although the process of devotional service to Lord Krishna is very simple, it is extremely difficult for stubborn conditioned souls to completely humble themselves before the Supreme Personality of Godhead and absorb themselves 24 hours a day in His loving service. So it's easy, but we are stubborn. The mood of loving service is anatem means opposite, or it doesn't match. The mood of loving service is anatem to belligerent conditioned souls determined to defy God and enjoy. When such stubborn conditioned souls attempt to bypass surrendering to God through proud attempts at philosophical speculation, austerity and yoga, they are turned back to the material platform by the powerful laws of God and violently merged into the heaving ocean of insignificance called the material world. This is what Prabhupada says here. Who are these jnanis and yogis?
Those proud people who are not willing to surrender.
Yeah, they are proud people who don't want to surrender. Surrender is the direct path. You just surrender and everything is done. But no, I will not surrender. So therefore they take up the path of jnana, the path of astanga, and somehow try to be someone in this world, to do something on their own strength, right? So Prabhupada calls them stubborn, proud, belligerent. They are actually at war with the Supreme Lord. That is the case. But what is the result? They are just baffled. Prabhupada told us, Krishna told us before, they are baffled by the laws of nature. So we should very happily remain situated. We are very fortunate that we have already come to the path of devotional service and should be very happy to continue on this path. Even sometimes we also become a little stubborn, but we should beat the mind. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say 100 times in the morning with the shoe. And 100 my time in the evening with the broom. I don't remember which one is morning or evening, but it's the shoe and the broom. So keep chanting. That's how to beat the mind. keep chanting. There will be an end to the rebellious spirit at some point. So after giving us the good news that the devotees are actually most fortunate, because while these impersonalists struggle helplessly for a long time, many lifetimes, practicing severe austerities and torturing their mind, trying to fix it on some impersonal concept, the devotees very happily worship Krishna with devotion. They engage in devotional service, they think of Krishna, and in the end of life, when they do not even expect it, because the devotees are very humble, and they think, oh, I'm not worthy of Krishna's mercy. This is the thought of the devotee. But while the devotee thinks, oh, I am not worthy of Krishna's mercy, at the time of death, Krishna comes and picks the devotee. And in spite of still not being completely pure, in spite of still having some anarthas, the Lord, who is all merciful and who loves his devotees like a mother or like a father loves his children, he comes and he delivers the devotee. So after explaining this, Krishna is going to tell us how to apply these things, this knowledge, to our life, by explaining that there are different stages at which we can practice this surrender to Krishna, because not everyone is ready for the same degree of surrender, and not everyone is on the same platform of realization, on the same platform of knowledge. So therefore, not everyone can practice in the same way. So Krishna is giving us, from text 8 to text 12, different stages of devotion, or different stages of practice or approaching God, or So this is a little confusing section of the Bhagavad Gita, especially for the last verse. But we will sort it out according to Srila Prabhupada's purports, which closely follow Baladevi Vidyabhushan's explanation, as well as Srila Ramanujacharya's explanation. So in these verses we will see that there are different stages or levels of practice. And basically there are two different levels that Krishna is going to talk about. In verses 8, 9 and 10, Krishna is going to talk of the direct process of engaging directly in his devotional service, but at three different levels. So in 8, there will be the topmost level of practice of devotional service. In 9, there will be the second level of practice of devotional service. And in 10, there will be the third level of practice of devotional service. And then in verses 11 and 12, Krishna will talk of the indirect path, which we have already studied. So all these methods are methods to come close to Krishna. Because we heard the one who is the Yuktatama, the most properly connected with me. We want to connect with Krishna. We want to come very close to him in a personal relationship. So for this, there are different methods. Some are direct and some are indirect. So in verse 8, we will hear of the topmost level, which is full Krishna consciousness. This is an advanced level of Krishna consciousness. So let us hear what Krishna says.
Mayi vamana dhatsva mayi buddhim niveshaya nivasishyasi mayeva ata urdhvam nasamshayaha.
Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always, without a doubt. So what is Krishna saying here? What is to be done? Just fix your mind upon me. As simple as that. And not only fix it, leave it there. Just have your mind always fixed on me. And engage your intelligence. How much intelligence? All your intelligence in me. When? Always. So this is his recommendation. This is what you should do. And then, the first two lines, he explains, mayeva mana adhatsva, so you fix your mind on me. And in the second line, you fix your intelligence on me. And then in the next two lines, he will give the result of this, twofold result of doing that. So we understand from Srila Prabhupada that this is a very high level of practice of Krishna consciousness, in which one serves Krishna with the mind and intelligence completely involved in him. This is actually what Krishna has advised to Arjuna. He said, Mama Smara Yudhyasva. You fight and remember me. And somebody was asking, how is that possible? Sorry? Yes. So we have to, the mind has to be completely fixed on Krishna, unswervingly. This actually mostly kind of refers to the level of sadhya bhakti, the perfectional stage of bhakti, at the level of bhava, prema, when the devotee is living within this material body, but is already, his consciousness is completely with Krishna. And he never forgets Krishna. In this kind of state of devotion, there is full remembrance of Krishna. The mind is always involved in contemplating the beautiful form of Krishna, and the intelligence is involved in the same, in remembering Krishna. This is unconditional service in love. There is no impetus from outside for doing the service. It is all self-propelled from within, because one is in contact with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains, one who is engaged in Lord Krishna's devotional service lives in a direct relationship with the Supreme Lord. So there is no doubt that his position is transcendental from the very beginning. So what is Krishna, Prabhupada explaining here? He is explaining the status of such devotee, which is actually what Krishna explains in the last two lines. What happens to him? What is the result of practicing devotional service at such an unconditional state, level? What is the result? Krishna said, you will live in me always, without doubt. You live in me. So what does that mean, that the devotee lives in Krishna?
always absorbed, always remembering Him. He's in direct contact, he's in a direct relationship. He actually sees Krishna, he realizes his relationship with Krishna, he interacts with Krishna in a direct relationship. Srila Prabhupada says, he is transcendental. His feet are on the ground, but his consciousness is not under the three gunas. He's transcendental. Prabhupada explains, to live with me means that the devotee does not live on the material plane. Why is that? What is he specially absorbed in? What Prabhupada says here, he is absorbed in chanting the holy name. The topmost devotee is absorbed in chanting the holy name. And the holy name is none different from Krishna. And from the holy name emanates the internal potency of the Lord. And the devotee who is always chanting and whose mind is always fixed on Krishna, he is completely surrounded by this internal potency, which puts him on a transcendental platform. So he comes under the control of the internal potency. What else does Prabhupada explain? This he says, the holy name of the Lord and the Lord are none different. Therefore, when a devotee chants Hare Krishna, Krishna and his internal potency are dancing on the tongue of the devotee. When he offers Krishna food, Krishna directly accepts these eatables and the devotee becomes Krishna-ized. He becomes Krishna-ized by eating the remnants. One who does not engage in such service cannot understand how this is so, although this is a process recommended in the Bhagavad Gita and in other Vedic literatures. So this is how the devotee, this is the result of this complete absorption in Krishna, is there is no more influence of the three gunas. One lives on the transcendental platform, as we heard, under, is a Mahatma, right? Who lives under the Devi Shakti. He lives under the transcendental energy. Now, this is not all. He says, Ata urvam na samsayaha, which can also be understood to mean that thereafter, meaning when he passes away, during his life he is transcendental. And when he passes away, then he returns back home, back to Godhead. So this is the fruit of constant remembrance. This is how the state of transcendence comes, when there is constant remembrance. Now, it's like when Prabhupada told the devotees, you have to be 100% pure, then you can go back to Godhead. The devotees said, oh. So similarly, when we hear this, we say, oh, how will I ever do that? I can't do that. So Krishna knows our mind. So what he says, Ata chittam samadhatum nasaknoshi maisthiram Abhyasa yogena tato mamichaptum dhananjaya. My dear Arjun, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. So here Krishna is giving second tier. And what is this?
If you cannot atachittam samadhatum na shaknoshi mayi stiram, if you cannot fix your mind in this way, which Srila Prabhupada explains that these two lines refers to practice in perfection. Prabhupada says in this verse, two different processes of bhakti yoga are indicated. The first, in the first two lines, which is what we can't do, applies to one who has actually developed an attachment for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by transcendental love. So the first one, which is in verse 8, and that Krishna refers to in the first two lines of verse 9, this is the advanced stage, which can be asakti or bhava, very advanced stage of practicing devotion with attachment to Krishna. And the other, so what is the other? Abhyasa yogena tato. This is the practice. What should be done? Abhyasa yoga. Abhyasa yoga, and we should practice. We should practice because the attraction is not there. The attachment to Krishna is not there. The desire to attain Him is not strong enough. Because everything in our life that happens is according to our desire. If our desire is very, very, very strong to achieve Krishna, then there will be the power to fix the mind and intelligence on Him. But if there is the desire to achieve Krishna and so many other little desires next to it, I also want this, I also want that, I also want this and this and that, then this resolution, this vyavasayatmika buddhi, that doesn't happen. And therefore the remembrance is not there. But what can be done is practice. Practice not following these desires or engaging them in Krishna's service. Practice bringing back the mind, and in general, be a sadhaka. Practice sadhana bhakti. So Prabhupada says, the other is for one who has not developed an attachment for the Supreme Person by transcendental love. For this second class, there are different prescribed rules and regulations one can follow to be ultimately elevated to the stage of attachment to Krishna. So Prabhupada says that stage of love can be achieved by practice of devotional service performed with the present senses. So this refers to the stage in which one is actually practicing. Two things. Prabhupada says it refers to just sadhana bhakti. You practice. You are not perfect, but you practice. You engage the senses under the guidance of the guru. You will see in the Nectar of Devotion that the upper levels of bhakti, you don't need to hear from anyone, do this, do that, do this, do that, or don't do this, don't do that. It's automatic due to the desire to serve Krishna and the purity of the heart. But otherwise, we need to hear from the Shastra, from the Guru. The Guru has to push us, pull us, always remind us, I had told you to do this, I wanted you to do that, why didn't you do it? So we should submit ourselves to the spiritual master and practice. So engage the senses to purify the desire by practicing this sadhana bhakti. Our desire and our purpose to achieve Krishna, that will become clear. This also means that what is our problem? Our problem is we can't fix the mind. So this level here of Abhyasa Yoga, it means all the different practices of Bhakti Yoga. Prabhupada lists, he says, rise early, take bath, offer prayers, chant Hare Krishna, cook for the deity, take prasadam, constantly hear Bhagavad Gita, constantly hear Srimad Bhagavatam. This practice will help one rise. Okay. But while doing all these things, one should cultivate remembrance. This is the Abhyasa Yoga. One should try to fix the mind, try to fix the mind on Krishna. This practice of Bhakti Yoga under the rules and regulations with the direction of a spiritual master will surely bring one to the stage of love of God. So this is how to come to the level of verse 8. By the practice of sadhana bhakti and making an effort to fix the mind, one will develop the desire, ichaptum. You will obtain the desire to serve or to be only for Krishna. We will reach attachment to Him. And Srila Prabhupada explains that this attraction and attachment for Krishna, it is dormant in the heart. So you will hear this in the Nectar of Devotion. Srila Rupa Goswami has given a very appropriate example of a child who learns to walk, a human child. In the human child, there is the propensity to walk. Just as within the soul, the jivatma, there is the propensity to love and serve Krishna. It is there, it is natural, it is our constitutional position. There were some scientists, a couple of scientists in America, I think in the 80s or something. They did a research because they were wondering, they could see that there are so many similarities between the humans and the chimpanzees. You know chimpanzee? It's a kind of monkey that they use in the circus because he's very smart. He can do many things. They dress them up and he can walk on a thread and can do so many things, the chimpanzee. So they were thinking that maybe why the chimpanzees they develop as chimpanzees and why the humans develop as humans. So they were trying to make a comparative study to find out similarities and to find out where is the breaking point. Why one behaves like a monkey and the other one's like a human. So they were speculating, right, that maybe it's a question of training. So what they did is that they actually went to live in the jungle. And they managed in such a way that when they had a baby themselves, they were a couple, so they had a little baby. And at that time, they managed to catch a small baby chimpanzee that was just born. They had the mother chimpanzee and she also gave birth to a little baby chimpanzee. So they took both the babies, they adopted the chimpanzee baby. And they kept both of them. They gave both of them the same bed. They gave both of them the same pillow, the same bed sheet, the same little, you know, for the kids, they hang some things above the kid that the king can see and play with. They did that for both of them. They spoke to both of them. They fed both of them. They took care of both of them. They did everything with both of them. And in the beginning, they were saying, wow, miracle. The baby chimpanzee is reacting exactly like the human baby. He was going like, ah. You know, like you heard the small babies, they go like, ooh, ooh, ooh. You heard the small babies, how they speak here? Ooh, ooh. So he was doing like this. You know how the chimpanzees, they curve their lips backwards and were like, ooh. So he was, they were saying, he's going to speak. Yeah. So slowly, so the months, the weeks passed, and then the months passed, and then slowly. slowly too. The baby, human baby, started speaking and he started walking. But the other one, first comes the walking and then the speaking. So the first problem was the walking, that they were trying to train both of them. You know, you keep by the hands the baby and you make him walk. So they were doing that with the human baby and they were doing that with the chimpanzee baby. They were about the same size. It looked very cute. They had the same dress and everything. But after some time, what happened is that the human baby, he actually left the hands and he stood on his feet. But the chimpanzee, he only stood on his four. And he refused to stand on his rear legs. You know, first of all, his rear legs didn't grow. They became shorter. They remained shorter. And his arms became very long. Lamba bahu, you know. And so then they understood that, oh, it's not training only. There is something inside which is dormant. There is a propensity, a capacity. Of course, this was on the material platform. But within the genes of the human, there is the capacity to walk. And within the genes of the chimpanzee, there is not the capacity to walk. And so Prabhupada explains that by practice, if it is there, it can be awakened by practice. And if it is not there, you can practice as much as you like. It's not going to come. So, sadhana bhakti is a practice. And it is not awakening or developing something unnatural. The propensity is there in the jivatma to serve Krishna and to love Krishna. But we forgot. Just like when a baby takes birth, he forgets about his past lives and he forgets that there is how to walk. He forgets how to walk. So he has to practice. And then it comes back, and once he knows, then that's it. It's natural. It was there from before. So this is sadhana bhakti, text 9. This is sadhana bhakti, but it is sadhana bhakti practiced with an emphasis on trying to remember Krishna. And focused on developing the desire to attain Krishna, of refining one's purpose, working on one's consciousness. So this should be the life of a sadhaka, to work on the consciousness while we are doing things for Krishna, hearing, chanting, etc. Then Krishna takes us to another stage. And the same logic is there if you cannot do that, because not everyone can practice getting up early in the morning, chanting japa, worshipping the deity. Not everyone can do those things, and not everyone is ready to actually transform one's consciousness. Yes? Sorry? Well, the 8 is a very high level of practice. Either you can take it of being perfection, sadhya bhakti, or you can take it to be at least asakti, practicing on a very high level with attraction for Krishna, which leads to love of Godhead. The result will be to achieve Krishna, to be with Him. So it's the very high stage, asakti, bhava, It is at that stage. It leads to realization. It leads to bhava. And number nine is the practice, abhyasa yoga. Then we have abhyasepya samartosi matkarma paramo bhava madartam api karmani kurvan siddhim avapsyasi. So there is the same construction here, abhyase api asamarto asi. Prabhupada says, if you cannot practice the regulations of bhakti yoga, which regulations? What is that? No, it does, that's why I'm asking. It does not refer to the four regulative principles. It refers to the practice of sadhana. If you cannot follow the practice of sadhana, you cannot do that. The nine processes of devotional service. If you are not able to follow these nine processes of bhakti devotional service, then he says, what is to be done? Mat karma paramo bhava. Then just try to work for me. You should just try to work for me. Why? In other words, what will be the result of this? Madartam api karmani kurvan siddhim avapsyasi. By working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. So it will be the means of advancement. You work for me. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, you have to perform transcendental services for me. So this work for me here, it's not exactly karma yoga. It's not karma yoga, this work for me. This is mat karma. You remember, Prabhupada refers to chapter 11, verse 55. Mat karma krin, mat paramo. It means you should work for me with full understanding that it's for me. So Prabhupada explains, what is it that one can do here? If one is not able even to practice the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, under the guidance of a spiritual master, he can still be drawn to this perfectional stage by working for the Supreme Lord. How to do this work has already been explained in the 55th verse of the 11th chapter. One should be sympathetic to the propagation of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada gives example that one can help. One can give land, capital, one can provide organization, one can work, different kinds of, but it's directly connected to the Krishna consciousness movement. It's direct work for Krishna. In materialism, one works for sense gratification, and then one may give a piece to Krishna also. But this refers to a spiritual activity. The same work, however, can be performed for the satisfaction of Krishna, and that is spiritual activity. If one has sufficient money, he can help in building an office or a temple for propagating Krishna consciousness, or he can help with publications. There are various fields of activity and one should be interested in such activities. Prabhupada refers to this also as voluntary service to the cause of Krishna consciousness. This will help one to rise to a higher state of love of God, whereupon one becomes perfect. And one will the result will be siddhim. One will progress towards siddhim. And what is the siddhim?
Perfection.
Yes. And what is the perfection?
Krishna consciousness.
It's that the number 8. slowly, slowly, one will be progressing towards that. But there are different levels. If you cannot take vows, if you cannot be a full-fledged sadhaka, then at least work for Krishna. Directly for Krishna. Do something. So this is understood that some people will do. We have people like this, you know. They do some work, but they don't chant. They help the movement. They will always be there. Every Janmashtami, they're there. The rest of the year, don't know where they are. But they are there. So when they come, they do that kind of work. And especially if they do it with the purpose for Krishna, and usually they do that, they know, they have some understanding, so they will work for Krishna. And by doing this, gradually they will be elevated. In one sense, yes, it includes if you want. There are two ways of seeing this. In one sense, you could say, yeah, you can't be a sadhaka because you can't chant 16 rounds, you can't follow four regulative principles. So just let have him do as much as he can. Let him work for Krishna. There is another meaning that we can take from this is that in the first two verses, we were talking of people who are really trying to transform their consciousness and really trying to apply their mind to remembering Krishna. Whereas this level here is of someone who is, he may also be chanting. This one, he may be chanting, he may not be chanting. He's working for Krishna. But the thing for sure is that he has not gotten into this thing of actually fixing the mind on Krishna. He's not into that. It's a much more external practice of Krishna consciousness, very official and external practice of Krishna consciousness without the remembrance. The mind is not fixed on Krishna. But some intention is there because he understands. So these are three levels. One is full attachment, unconditional service. The next one is regulated service. And the third one is do as much as you can. And in the first two kinds, there should be internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Whereas here, the person is working more with his, you know, his money or his senses or whatever, is working for Krishna. Yes? It's bhakti yoga, but at the level of engaging the senses, working for Krishna. This is what has been mentioned, Prabhupada says, in 1155, mat karma krin, mat paramo. And this is what Krishna explained. The first level, when we explained that verse, we said that you can see it in different ways. It's five different angas of Ananya Bhakti, but you can also take them as being progressive. And if you take them as being progressive, the first state is mat karma krin. You work for me. And as you progress, mat parama, you fix your purpose on attaining me. And then what was there after that? Mat karma kren, mat parama, sangha varjita. That gradually you get rid of your material desires, you purify your consciousness. And what was after that? Mat bhakta. So mat bhakta means that you become, you know, you develop devotion. And then the last point was that you become nirvera sarvabhutanam, that actually you become completely non-envious and you become a preacher and you benefit others. But the first level is work for me. Don't work for Maya. Work for me. So this is the first level of the practice of bhakti. And this is what we do when anyone comes to Krishna consciousness. What do we do with them? Put them in service. You engage them in some service. Do something. Put your hand, your feet, your everything. Just do something. We engage them in some service. And And amongst those people, some take up to sadhana and some don't. But there are people, they come every Sunday and they cut vegetables in the kitchen. But they never take up to the antaranga, the internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So this is a little superficial level of engaging what is called the external senses. We engage the external senses in the service of Krishna. Whereas number 9 and 8 means you actually became a full-fledged devotee and you develop, you know, you work on your mind, your consciousness, you link with Krishna internally. This is how these verses are explained. It's always association. The key of progress in all these stages is association. That they have to have some nice association. That's why we have to, in Krishna consciousness, we have to stress on networking and giving people association so that they feel drawn, they feel, you know, to be with the devotees and stay with the devotees. And by association they can learn, by hearing. Because this external, when we talk of work here, under this section of work for Krishna, mat karma krin, Prabhupada has put things like, you know, build an office, build a temple, do all these things. But you can also put under this work, you can also put hear and chant. But for those people, you know, it's very external. But still they do it. They get an opportunity because they work for Krishna, so they have to hear the kirtan. They have to take prasadam. They don't have the full understanding. But they work, they engage their external senses in Krishna's service. And so, because the holy name is absolute, Krishna prasadam is absolute, Krishna seva is absolute, then the purification takes place. And gradually, they'll take up the practice of Krishna consciousness. And what we should understand from these verses is that the actual practice of Krishna consciousness is on two levels. One is external and one is internal. And we are encouraged by Krishna to, well, encourage, he's telling us, you know, the best is that you cultivate internally, either by practicing or by just being like this once you advance. So these three verses, 8, 9, 10, are considered to be within the realm of bhakti. Even though it's karma in the sense, it's by the material senses and the consciousness is not fully there, but it is directly in Krishna's service. It's not work in the factory, you know, doing some ugra karma and at the end of the month, you know, give something. It's not exactly like this. It's more, even though Prabhupada adds, if they give to Krishna, that's also, it starts, if they give something to Krishna. But the best is to engage them directly in some service. Yes?
Somebody gives some money to a devotee as a gift, but the devotee uses that money in the service of Krishna in order that that person can get any sukriti. Will he, actually the person who gave the money will acquire any sukriti out of that?
Yeah, if it is used in Krishna's service, yes.
The person who gave the money was gave it as a gift, not for Krishna, but for the person.
So that's called agyata sukriti, unknowingly. He has served Krishna unknowingly.
So he will get a capital with the order.
Yes, he will get. If it is used in Krishna's service, he will get.
Be working, you mean?
In the outside world,
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, this can be full-time or part-time. It can be full-time or part-time. You know, if you have a job outside, you do something for maintaining your family, for doing this, for doing that, that's not exactly matkarma krin, that's karma. But then you come to the temple and you polish the brass, and Prabhupada said you grow the flowers, and you spend, you do some voluntary service in the temple. So that's matkarma krin. So what Krishna will, what Krishna means is there is that you should do some of that work, only that, or at least some of that, should work for me. And by working for me, you will achieve, you will progress further to the next stage. Yeah. So, yeah, so this is mixed. It's mixed. It's, you do some karma because you are already engaged in the material world. You cannot just suddenly just give up everything and just do mat karma krin. It's very difficult to just work for Krishna, which usually is voluntary. It doesn't give any money. You know, or it gives a little money, but not, it's not business. So you do both, and you have to balance both, and try to see that your material occupation does not hamper your devotional service. You have to marry the two with an intelligent plan, you know, how the two can function together, and you have to try to spiritualize as much as you can your material work, by distributing prasadam to your colleagues, by inviting them to the Sunday program, starting a satsang at your workplace. You can do so many things to try to spiritualize. In other words, to try to bring as much mat karma krin as possible into your karma. So, any other questions? Who was there? Wait, she's there? Yes. Yes, there are different combinations. Remember that the difference between, according to Vishwan Chakravarti, the difference between this working for Krishna and the sadhaka, the sadhana one, 10 and 9, is mostly the consciousness. That one is, you know, you can have, there are different combinations. You can have someone, a congregation devotee, who is working, and on Sunday he goes to the temple and cuts the potatoes. And that's it. And he doesn't think much more than that. His mind is not fixed on Krishna. His mind is fixed on his business. And but he understands. He goes, he works for Krishna. He does things for Krishna. So he will progress in bhakti. And you can have another one who is working, but he's a full-fledged sadhaka. He's trying to fix his mind on Krishna. So that's a different level of practice of bhakti. But in both kinds, there are two activities. One is bhakti and one is karma. Karma is for maintenance. Bhakti is for Krishna. Both are work. One is work for Krishna. It's called matkarmakrin. And one is work for me. And which can be purified by giving portion of the income. And as I said, by spiritualizing in as many ways as you can. Yes?
Basically, this example that you just mentioned, where the better one, the, where the person is actually being a good sadhaka, he's internally improving, his mind isn't improving and Krishna consciousness, but he's also working for maintenance. So, would that be the perfect level, like level 8, or he has to eventually leave the work and serve for time to reach that stage?
No, he mostly has to leave his material attachments and develop attraction to Krishna. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we know he was a judge. He was working. He was working, and at the same time, he was at the level of 10. And sorry, 8. He was above 8, right? And he was working at the same time, and he had fully spiritualized his job. He was judging them in full Krishna consciousness. So he had fully spiritualized his job, and he was running a family of, 11 kids, you know? It's quite an endeavor. He was raising a family of 11 kids, out of whom 4 became sannyasis, and 1 became an acharya. So he was balancing the whole thing. If you read his schedule, how he was managing his life, it's quite amazing. And he wrote 100 books as well. By the way, in the night, instead of sleeping, he would go to bed at 8 and he would get up at 10. That was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's schedule. He would go to bed at 8 in the evening, he would get up at 10. He was chanting 64 rounds. And all night he was translating. Right? And in the morning he would take a little, one roti, some little simple thing, and by 9 o'clock he was at his job. Supervised, this was when he was living in Puri. He was supervising the management of the temple also, and he was being a judge. And he would work up to 5 o'clock or something like this. In the afternoon, he would take a little nap also, short. And then when he would come back home, he would take bath, he would take his evening dinner, something. And then it says he would spend time with his children, quality time. Quality time, he would check on all of them. He would give personal time to his children for a short while. And then he would engage in evening duties and he would chant more and then go to bed. So this is someone who, you know, because, see, that's why we explain that a devotee, the jnanis, they can only perform in the sannyas ashram. But the bhaktas, they can perform in any ashram. And their activities are different. And one of the main duties of a grihastha is to give a proper example of Krishna consciousness to those who are around, to be a good, nice person so that people develop appreciation for the devotee. Think, oh, he's a devotee, he's such a nice person. If at our job, this is also a nectar of devotion, there's an item called one should not be negligent with ordinary duties. And this is especially for the grihasthas, because they live amongst other people, and because of their lifestyle, they have to go about so many practical works, you know. So there are many practical works of the grihasthas, like, you know, they have to pay taxes because they own land. The tyagis, they don't own any land, they have nothing to do with taxes. But the grihasthas, they own land, so they have to pay taxes. So they should pay the taxes properly. They deal with servants, they should maintain them properly, not exploit them. And they deal with the garbage wala. They shouldn't leave their garbage all over. So many duties of the grihastha. They should not unnecessarily disturb their neighbors in the name of Krishna consciousness, putting the music on at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra at 4 o'clock in the morning to liberate all the conditioned souls of the neighborhood. You know, the neighbor happens to be a doctor who spent the whole night doing an operation and who wants to sleep. You know, at 4 o'clock in the morning, it's a residential area. You can't do these kind of things. You have to somehow integrate yourself properly within the environment. And if you really want to make noise at 4 o'clock, then that's why Prabhupada wanted communities where all the grihasthas come together and they all live together. They all get up at the same time because they're all practicing the same thing. So yes, we can practice all these levels of bhakti and be situated in the grihastha ashram. But you should also know that the grihastha ashram is not the end of life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't remain in that ashram. After some time, he left that ashram. And he dedicated himself 100% without any material duties. At some point in life, the material duties should end. This is varnashram, if we want to follow it. So there is, after grihastha, there is vanaprastha. No more taxes to be paid, no more, you know, this or that. And then you concentrate on this nine, to cultivate your, you know, more and more and more without any interruption. Because our progress has to be to constant remembrance and material duties. Even though we try to spiritualize them as much as possible, but they kind of interrupt slightly our practice of Krishna consciousness. You cannot say no, they do. Yes?
I think that Matkal means working for Krishna, attachment of mind is a part of Ananya Bhakti.
Working for Krishna with mind attached to Krishna. It's a part of Ananya Bhakti. It's a part of Bhakti, yes. Yes.
And just for, you know, giving charity and this, that is a part of, you know, described in there. And by following this step, one can come at the form of sadhana. You can achieve your mind.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I think what is the severe pain, you know, seeking or obsessing.
He will achieve perfection.
Perfection means he will come at the form of sadhana.
Of sadhana, you say. Yeah. He will come to the platform of sadhana. You have to understand that each of these verses is successive stages. So you come always to the next one. So Siddhim, he will come to sadhana, and ultimately he will come to the perfect, complete perfection. Yes. Yes. Okay, so should we go to the next? No? Of course, yes. What is this? Rebellious, stubborn condition, so. Sorry? You want another question? Okay. It is karma, but it is karma which supports bhakti. This karma which supports bhakti. Because your emphasis is not karma, your emphasis is bhakti. Right? And you work to maintain. But what do you maintain exactly? You maintain a body which is engaged in Krishna Bhakti. You maintain, but that's why also, but this has to go, if you want to completely spiritualize your work, you have to also go by the principles of simple living. Because as soon as you use the money that you earn for sense gratification, then the work becomes material. So you have to use it to maintain. The house is supposed to be a temple. You know, Prabhupada has explained us how a grihastha can completely spiritualize his life. The house belongs to Krishna. The center of the house is a temple. The aartis are going on morning, evening. Everything that is eaten is first offered. The members of the house come together and chant Hare Krishna together. They do kirtan, they do japa. Every day there should be reading of Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the life of a grihastha devotee. And therefore when he works outside, Yeah, it is in the domain of karma. But he's using, but all his energy is focused more towards devotion. He has a sadhaka body. His children are raised to become devotees. So it's all dovetailed in Krishna's service. So it cannot be, it's not the same as the materialistic activities. You just work because you have to maintain, right? So it's not like straight, you know, materialistic activity. But it depends on how much one is attached, to what one is attached, how much one gratifies the senses extra from the quota. But this is very, you know, Krishna consciousness is mostly a matter of consciousness. Because even when we talk of grihasthas living simply, it also depends in what kind of social circle you live. Some grihasthas, you know, we have in our movement, for example, we give the example of our, what's our grihastha? What's his name? I forgot. Ford. Ambarish Prabhu. Ambarish Prabhu. So, you know, what it means, simple living for him? His house is like a palace and he has to receive big businessmen and so on. But at the same time, if you ever meet him personally, unless you know, if you meet him in an ISKCON temple, unless you know who he is, you cannot figure that he's rich. Because he will be wearing bhakta pants, or he'll be wearing a simple kurta, cotton. He will not be wearing silk. He'll be wearing cotton. He has a little hair. And he'll be having a bead bag, and that's him. So the consciousness has to be understood. But then at home, well, you know, his wife has opulent saris and this and that. Why? Because they have to go to receptions and different things they have to do, because they live in a different circle. But they are simple at heart. So Krishna consciousness is a matter of consciousness. You can be rich and simple and austere. And you can be poor and bogey. You understand? Some poor people, are their whole life is about sense gratification, anything they grab. And some rich people are completely austere. They live very simply. And they engage their wealth in the service of the guests. And they just maintain a social status because they were born in that social status, so they have to maintain it. But that doesn't mean they are bogies. So the message is, begin with working for Krishna, whatever you can. And gradually practice Krishna Bhakti in a more internal way. Try to fix the mind. Adopt the regulative principles of Bhakti. Perfect the chanting. Perfect the hearing. You know, become a sadhaka. So this is a transition stage, this one. Working for Krishna. Then verse 11. Atheta lapya saktosi kartum madhyoga mashritaha sarvam karma palatyagam tatakuru yatatmavan. So again, atheta api asakta asi kartum madhyogam ashritaha. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, Then, what is to be done? Sarva karma phalatyagam tata kuru yatatmavan. Then try to act, giving up all results of your work, and try to be self-situated. So this is the level of karma yoga in this 11th year. One, he cannot work for Krishna because he doesn't have that kind, either because he has not understood that bhakti yoga is the best way to go about life, to purify oneself and to achieve the absolute truth. Either he has not understood, or Srila Prabhupada gives some other excuses. Maybe one is unable even to sympathize with the activities of Krishna consciousness because of social, familial, or religious considerations, or because of some other impediments. If one attaches himself directly to the activities of Krishna consciousness, there may be objections from family members. We know that, right? Yes. Or so many other difficulties. For one who has such problem, it is advised that he sacrifice the accumulated result of his activities to some good cause. Such procedures are described in the Vedic rules. So this is the Vedic marg. It is the indirect path. This is the yoga ladder that goes from karma to karma yoga, then after that you'll go to jnana, and then dhyana, and then gradually you elevate yourself. So there are many descriptions of sacrifices. You do the yajnas, and there are special functions of punya. And the understanding is that one who is stuck on that platform is because his knowledge is imperfect. He hasn't come to the level of knowledge, of understanding, I'm not this body, and there is a God, his name is Krishna, and I'm his servant. The one who does matkarmakrini, he has understood, I'm Krishna's servant. But he can't really practice perfectly. But this one, Prabhupada says, and by doing karma yoga, one may gradually become elevated to the stage of knowledge. By the practice of giving up the fruits of one's activities, one is sure to purify his mind gradually. And in that purified stage of mind, one becomes able to understand Krishna consciousness. So this is the indirect process, and Prabhupada already told us before, it's a stepping stone to come to Krishna consciousness, to understand that all work should be done for Krishna. But because I did not understand that, or because, you know, my family doesn't let me do it, or what is it, so I should just continue on the karma yoga marg. Prabhupada says, social service, community service, national service, sacrifice for one's country, etc., may be accepted so that someday one may come to the stage of pure devotional service to the Lord. If one decides to sacrifice for the supreme cause, so the understanding of the karma yogi, as we know from before, is one who somehow he accepts, at least from the shastras, that there is something higher. But he doesn't know fully it's Krishna, and it's, you know, he doesn't understand devotional service fully, but he understood that I should work for purification. I should become detached. I should work for achieving some transcendental result. So therefore the advice is you work according to your varna, your ashram, and specifically in case of grihasthas, you have to work. So according to whatever is your propensity, you do your work responsibly, but you don't be a karmi, be a karma yogi. When the salary comes, or the business profit comes, then at that time, karma phala tyaga. You give up the fruit. Either 10%, 20%, 50%, you have to give up. And by this giving up, you become detached. And this detached ultimately will come to the point of being detached from the body and understanding, I am not this body. So this is the Vedic process of gradual elevation to the level of knowledge. Yes? Yeah, so he may be worshipping Vishnu. But this also, matlab, karma yoga means that you actually sacrifice for a higher purpose. The lower level is karma, where you do the work and you eat the fruit. So that's not advised here. You should know that there is something more to achieve. Therefore, you sacrifice your wealth to achieve something more, which is knowledge, detachment, spiritual advancement in general. The point is, the idea is not clear, right? But according to the Shastra, when you do the yajñas, Prabhupada says here, there are sacrifices and so on. Yes, you sacrifice to Vishnu. That's according to Shastra. Yeah, with the idea of, yeah, but he may be doing it with the idea of just, you know, with the idea of achieving Vishnu. That's the idea. Now, verse 12, fasten your seat belts. So in verse 11, the person who is not a devotee, right? 11, 12 is non-devotees. They are not ananya bhaktas, they are not devotees. They are not practicing directly the path of Krishna bhakti. So, verse 11, that person, by giving up the result of his work, by doing nishkam karma yoga, he will gradually become convinced of the soul, of his spiritual identity, and Krishna says, become self-situated. What is the result of that? You will become self-situated, which means you'll understand who you are. You're not this body. And the mind will be purified of all attachment, and gradually, when one comes in the association of devotees, one will be able to accept bhakti. Then, verse 12. Shriyo hinyanam abhyasas jnana dhyana mishishyate dhyana karma phalatyagas chagachantir anantaram. So this is a verse which is actually considered to be the most difficult verse of the Bhagavad Gita, because of the way Krishna has presented. If you look at the Sanskrit, you will see that it says Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasaj. So he says Shreya, we know what it means, it's the better, the best. What is the best? What is the best? Well, he said better than abhyasa. What is this abhyasa? It's the sadhana bhakti. It's the practice of devotional service. So better than that is what? Is gyan. And jnana dhyana vishishyate, better than this gyan is a dhyana. It's the ashtanga yoga, is the higher level, you should meditate. It should be a yogi dhyana. And then, but better than this dhyana is the karma phala tyaga, which is you be a good karma yogi and just give up, become nishkam. Why? Because tyaga chantir anantaram. Because by practicing this, you will become peaceful. And the idea is, but so we have to understand the missing pieces here. You know, this is illusive. You have to understand the missing pieces. There are missing pieces. The idea is that Prabhupada explained, actually Prabhupada gives us a chewed up, fully chewed up. You know, Prabhupada chews it like the mother bird is chewing the thing and then giving to the little bird. It's already digested. So this is Prabhupada said, if you cannot take to this practice, so the point is not that jnana is better than devotional service, but if you are such person that you cannot practice devotional service, then you should do something else. You should not just do nothing. If you can't take the direct path, you should take the indirect one. You should be situated in yoga, either this one or that one. Because you see, the construction of the previous verses was always like this. If you can't do this, then the next stage is that. And if you can't do that, then the next stage is this. So here is the same, that if you can't do this devotional service at all, you can't be a bhakti yogi, then be a jnani. Then, Shreya, at that point it is better. Because you can't force people to be a full-time devotee or to be a devotee even, just a sadhaka. You can't force people if they are not ready, if they are not understood, then you can't force them. So let them, Krishna said, don't disturb the ignorant. Let them do their dutiful work. And by doing that, they will gradually understand. In this life, next life, 100 lives, sometime, but they will understand. Then it is better, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. But, as we heard before, cultivation of knowledge means you try to understand the Atma, right? You try to understand what is the Brahman, what is the Atma. So there is cultivation of knowledge, again through the study of scriptures, through speculative reasoning and so on. But better than knowledge is meditation. Because meditation, as we know, the goal of Dhyana Yoga is what? What is the goal of Dhyana Yoga? The Vishnumurti is the Paramatma. So this is higher than Gyan, everyone understand? This is higher than Gyan, that you can actually meditate on the Paramatma. But then better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. What's missing in between there is that actually if you can't meditate, why you can't meditate? Because you're not peaceful. You're not peaceful. Because you're not peaceful, so you can't meditate, you can't do gyan, you can't do dhyan. So the recipe is better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. Because by such renunciation, you can attain peace of mind. And as you know very well from before, Krishna actually does not encourage gyan yoga fully. And he does not encourage Dhyana Yoga fully. What he encourages always is Nishkam Karma Yoga. How many chapters? Two? Three? He starts in chapter 2. He goes in chapter 3. He goes in chapter 4. He goes in chapter 5. What is he trying to tell us? Nishkam Karma Yoga. You do your work according to your propensity and you give up the fruit. And by giving up the fruit, you will come to knowledge. And when you come to knowledge, then you can study the Upanishads and you can try to cultivate knowledge. But in general, Krishna advises, he tells us, he has told us, it's a dangerous path. If you take to that path, it's a dangerous path. Risk of impersonalism. And if you take to dhyan, it's the same. some risk of impersonalism, very difficult to practice. We saw in chapter 6, very difficult to practice. Hardly any person in this age can take to this dhyana yoga and realize the super soul. And the super soul is not the end. After that, you have to keep going and understand the super soul to be rooted in Krishna. So, what is good always is do your karma yoga, and then by the association of the devotees, hopefully, you won't never have to go through this dhyan, gyan. You just, because it's so natural. You work for Maya, and then one day you meet a devotee and he tells you, not for Maya, for Krishna. And very easily, a karma yogi becomes a bhakti yogi. A karma yogi who is at the level of knowledge very easily becomes a bhakti yogi. But as we heard, a jnana yogi who is, you know, he's also at the level of knowledge, but because he has practiced that jnana, for him it's tedious to get rid of the impersonalistic tendency. So if you cannot do bhakti yoga, you better take, you know, on this level of transcendental work, there is jnana and there is dhyana. But this is very difficult. It's a very difficult path. So better you do karma yoga. This also means, another way to understand that is that Krishna is not saying that actually this karma yoga is superior to jnana and dhyana, because in one sense it's not. But what he means is that unless you have been successful in nishkam karma yoga, you will never be successful in this jnana and dhyana. In other words, if you take to the indirect path, you should begin with karma yoga. And if you are successful in that, in becoming nishkam, then there is a little chance you can be successful in the rest, in jnana and dhyana. So let's see what Prabhupada says about this. Baladevi Vidyabhushan Prabhu says that this verse praises karma yoga. It's a praise because it is the basis of spiritual life, this karma yoga. The other processes cannot be successful unless one has been purified to a certain level through this karma yoga. At least as far as the indirect path is concerned. Here, but even in devotional service, generally someone who is able to accept devotional services because some level of detachment has been cultivated. But devotional service is also such a powerful process that even a sinful person, because of the mercy element and the power of bhakti yoga, even if someone has not gone through all this purification of, and has not become nishkam and has not come to the level of knowledge, through the mercy of the devotee, one can also come to devotional service. So Prabhupada explains for those who are actually not able to follow the principles of Krishna consciousness, it is better to cultivate knowledge, because by knowledge one can be able to understand his real position. Gradually knowledge will develop to the point of meditation. By meditation, one can be able to understand the Supreme Lord by a gradual process. There are processes which make one understand that one himself is the Supreme. What was that? Monism, you remember this? Ahangropasana, worshipping himself as the Brahman. And that sort of meditation is preferred if one is unable to engage in devotional service. If one is not able to meditate in such a way, you see, so the point is, if one is not able to be a great Dhyan yogi, because a Dhyan yogi, understand, is a transcendentalist, whereas the Karma yogi is getting there. He's not yet, has not reached that stage. So if one is not able to meditate, then there are prescribed duties, as enjoined in the Vedic literature for the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras, which we shall find in the last chapter of Bhagavad Gita. But in all cases, one should give up the result of fruits of labor. This means to employ the result of karma for some good cause, with the idea of achieving, you know, a higher position spiritually. In summary, to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the highest goal, there are two processes. One process is by gradual development, and the other process is direct. Devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the direct method. And the other method involves renouncing the fruits of one's activities. Then one can come to the stage of knowledge, then to the stage of meditation, then to the stage of understanding the Supersoul, and then to the stage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the yoga ladder. There is a direct path. Otherwise there is from karma to jnana, to dhyan, to bhakti. One may take either the step-by-step process or the direct path. It's according to one's qualification. The direct process is not possible for everyone. Therefore, the indirect process is also good. It is, however, to be understood that the indirect process is not recommended for Arjuna. We will read that. I was thinking to read that in the end, in the 18th chapter. This important point that some people interpret that Arjun, you know, he was just asked to do his duties in Varnashram. But that's not exactly that. He was asked to use his qualities in direct service to Krishna. And it's slightly different. Although it involves using the qualities and working according to the qualities, but the consciousness in these two paths are very different. One is using one's qualities in the service of Krishna, and it can be Kshatriya qualities, it can be Brahminical qualities, it can be Vaishya qualities, it can be Shudra qualities. In direct work for Krishna, like the battle of Kurukshetra, it is to fulfill Krishna's mission on this earth to re-establish proper rulers. Or one can work, you know, really fully identified with the body, thinking, I am a Kshatriya, I am a Brahmana, I am a Vaishya, I am a Shudra. This is the level of the non-devotee who is particularly identified with the body and who will work with these qualities, but not directly for Krishna. He works because he's forced to work by the modes of material nature. And he works just to maintain the family, the society, the community. That's the goal of his work. And if he's lucky and hears from the Shastra, then he understands that I should get out of this bodily concept. And I should attain a spiritual consciousness I should work for the Lord who created all this system for my advancement. So Prabhupada says, so this indirect process of karma and karma falatyaga, to bring one to jnana, to bring one to dhyan, to bring one to bhakti, that is not recommended for Arjuna, because he is already at the stage of loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. It is for others who are not at this stage. For them, the gradual process of renunciation, karma falatyaga, knowledge, meditation, and realization of the Super Soul and Brahman should be followed. But as far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, it is the direct method that is stressed. Everyone is advised to take to the direct method and surrender, and to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Learn to work for Him. And work for Him being situated in the identity as a servant of Krishna. So a servant of Krishna may have material qualities. We all have material qualities because we all have a material body. So we all have an ashram and we all have a varna. But Krishna says, you use this directly in my service. Don't just be a regular Vaishya who makes business and raises money and this and that. But if someone cannot understand Krishna, then let him be that. That's very good. If someone cannot understand, work directly for Krishna, then let him be a nice Vaishya. Let him be a dutiful Brahmana. Let him be a dutiful Shudra. And let him do all this good work. Let him do good work for the society. Let him do all these things. Let him do his duty. And gradually, 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 the mind will be purified by giving up. Teach him to give up the activities, the result of his activities. And gradually, the level of knowledge will come. So, but in general, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, you know, instead of engaging them in all this gradual process, just really try to just get him to do something for Krishna. Because that process is so powerful. And it is the process in this age that we should bring everyone and try to engage them in Sankirtan and try to engage them in direct work for Krishna as much as they can. As much as they can. And anchor, but on the side, since some of them cannot, then encourage them to follow their duties according to their varna. So it is a broad idea. As you see, Krishna gives so many levels. And it also means that in one time, in one town, in one place, you will have all these people doing different things. Some will be in complete Dehatma Buddhi and they will be doing their duties, and you know, they have still half faith in the demigods and not sure about what is the Supreme Lord, or is there a Supreme Lord, is he impersonal, personal, you know, but they follow their duties, so they are progressing. And then you will have another one who is like, oh yeah, there is Krishna. Let me do something for him. Let me work for him. And there is another one who will say, there is only Krishna. Let me take initiation and let me, you know, try to realize him. And there will be another one who will be completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And all of them may pick a flower in the morning. One picks a flower to enjoy its smell. One picks a flower to give it to Krishna, hoping to get $10,000 in return. Another one will pick a flower and give it to Krishna just because it's his duty, because he's a pujari. And so he's doing his duty as a pujari, and he has to give the flower because it has to be there and it should be clean and it should be this color and this and that. Another one will pick the flower, understanding this is Krishna's smile. And with lots of love and devotion, we'll give it to Krishna without expecting anything in return. So all these people have to live together. And by now, I think they are all in ISKCON as well.
All exist.
Different levels of consciousness. But by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we are drawn to this Matkarma Krim. We are drawn to that. Even though the consciousness is mixed. And that's also a characteristic that in fact it's not really that in ISKCON we have karmis and karma yogis and this and that, but we have mishra bhaktas. Karma mishra, jnan mishra, dhyan mishra, and all this. And then we have the pure devotee on the level of sadhaka, and we have the pure devotee attracted to Krishna. All these different levels are there with all different kinds of mindsets, you know, and levels of attachment also, levels of realization and so on. So, and this is all Krishna's plan, because Krishna wants everybody. He wants to attract everybody, and he wants everybody, and he has made this systematic approach to himself, that if you know, whatever level you are at, just progress, continue. I am the goal, she says. I am the goal. You just come to me. I am the goal. Okay, so any question on this? Or we'll stop here, we'll have lunch, then more questions after lunch. Any question? Okay. Thinking. Sorry? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.